This episode is brought to you by Odmo's Pizza in Cambie. Handmade awesome pizza plus craft beer, wine, and cider. Delivered. Call them today at 503-263-8444.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Cambie,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
A brush fire that broke out at the base of steep cliffs along Highway 99E and quickly spread Wednesday afternoon should serve as a warning to how fast such incidents can get out of hand, Cambie Fire Chief Jim Davis says. Fortunately, Cambie Fire, Clackamas Fire, and numerous other agencies were able to quickly respond to the three-alarm call and bring the blaze under control after it burned only about 10 acres. Our automatic aid system worked perfectly, Davis told the Cambie Current. I credit a lot of the success of this operation to that system working so well. And I can't say enough about how hard the firefighters were working up there yesterday. At its peak, more than 30 fire apparatuses and nearly 100 firefighters were on the scene, Davis said. As of Thursday morning, the cause of the blaze was unknown. It started down under the transmission lines close to the highway, Davis said. The entire area was on fire and spreading up the hill. The Bonneville Power Administration and Portland General Electric shut down power in the area and on South End Road as far as John McLaughlin Elementary. The response included more than area fire districts. The Oregon Department of Forestry contributed a dozer to cut a line around the fire and a contracted helicopter to do water drops from above, while ODOT assisted in detouring thousands of rush hour motorists along 99E. We know that was really difficult, but we so appreciate the patience of the motorists on 99E, Davis said, because we really needed to have the access on South End Road for the dozer and firefighters. The chopper made it easier to address areas that were difficult to reach due to the steep terrain. Crews remained on scene throughout the night, mopping up hot spots. The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office went door to door to ensure all residents in the immediate area had been able to evacuate safely. All residents within a quarter mile of the 2300 block of South End Road were ordered to evacuate immediately, while another group was in level 2 status. The Clackamas County Fairgrounds were designated a staging area for the people and livestock, including 12 horses from the Extreme Friesian Stables, one of the country's premier breeders of KFPS registered Royal Friesians. One of the mares had a three-week-old foal, while another was ready to give birth any day now, according to Fairgrounds Executive Director Lori Bothwell. Chief Davis estimated the value of the animals at more than $3 million. Two other horses also came in from the evacuation zone, Bothwell said, while a few elderly residents stopped by for a few hours but did not stay overnight. We had a lot of people who brought horse trailers and their trucks to help evacuate as needed, Bothwell told the Current. The American Red Cross was here just in case. We just didn't know how big the fire was going to be. We were ready for anything. Davis reminds residents to please abide by the burn ban currently in effect and cut back vegetation on your property as much as possible. Folks should know that the fuels are exceptionally dry right now, Davis said, referring to combustible materials such as shrubs, trees, and other vegetation that could feed a fire. Also, be prepared to leave and please evacuate if you are directed to do so. For photos, find the story on our website, cambiefirst.com. The COVID-19 vaccine and face masks will be optional for both students and staff in the coming school year. The Canby School Board decided this Monday, and in-person instruction will be offered at all schools for 5 days a week. The school board approved the new operational guidelines at the recommendation of new superintendent Aaron Downs, who stepped into the new role on July 1st. In my short time here, I've been collaborating with staff, community partners, and families as we plan for the 2021-2022 school year, said Downs, who was previously an assistant superintendent for the West Lynn Wilsonville School District. Downs' recommendation was based on feedback from teachers, officials, community members, and a community survey that the district conducted online. In these surveys, responses had been overwhelmingly in favor of non-mandatory masks and vaccine and a 5-day in-person school week. The Oregon Department of Education and Oregon Health Authority have empowered school districts to make local decisions about COVID-19 health and safety protocols and mitigation strategies, Downs said. Our operational framework reflects local decision-making. While the district will not require any students or staff to wear masks inside the school buildings, it is encouraging students, employees, and visitors to do so if they have not been fully vaccinated, per CDC recommendations. Physical distancing of 3 feet will be maintained to the extent possible, Downs said, and students, staff, and visitors will ask to be mindful of physical distancing. Individuals who have been in close contact with someone who is diagnosed with COVID-19 may be required to quarantine based on the guidance from Clackamas County Public Health. Fully vaccinated individuals, however, will not be required to quarantine. Students and staff will not be required to receive the COVID-19 vaccine or disclose their vaccination status. However, they may voluntarily share this information in the event of exposure to COVID-19 to avoid quarantine. There is no requirement for districts to offer comprehensive distance learning options for students. Canby School District will follow the OSAA guidance for indoor and outdoor athletic activities and adhere to facility capacity requirements. Face coverings will be optional for all athletes and spectators during all school-sponsored clubs, sports competitions, practices, and activities. I want to thank those of you who took the time to respond to our survey, Downs said. Your thoughtful responses helped inform our plan. I look forward to the upcoming school year and getting to know our students, staff, families, and community members. Oregon State University student Chloe Zinda is the state's newest and perhaps youngest millionaire. Governor Kate Brown announced at a news conference Friday that the McMinnville native won the grand prize of $1 million before taxes in the state's vaccine lottery meant to incentivize more Oregonians to take the free COVID-19 vaccine. Zinda, a part-time swim instructor, was at work when the call and follow-up text came in from state officials, prompting her to immediately ask a coworker, "Is this a scam?" It was not. "I was so shocked," a beaming Zinda said at Friday's conference, flanked by Brown and Oregon Health Authority Director Pat Allen. "I ran downstairs and was just screaming and running around. Yeah, it was insane." Zinda, who is studying fine arts, said she will use the money to pay off student loans, pursue her dreams of being an artist, and possibly open her own studio someday. "This money is really going to be life-changing for me," she said. "I'm just really excited about what the future holds." The state's Take Your Shot campaign included other incentives, including a $10,000 prize to a resident of every one of Oregon's 36 counties. Those winners will be announced in the coming weeks. Earlier in the press engagement, Brown and other officials gave an update on Oregon's improved coronavirus outlook, much of that thanks to the fact that more than 70% of the state's adults have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while more than 2.2 million Oregonians have been fully vaccinated. "We absolutely know that by reaching our goal of 70%, which we reached last Friday, our communities are safer," Brown said. "We are going to continue our vaccination efforts. We're going to double down and make sure every Oregonian who wants a vaccination can get one." Brown said Oregon ranks 18th in the country in the percentage of residents who've received at least one dose, but 12th in terms of the share of its population that is fully protected against COVID-19. "I'm very excited for our winner, but I'm just as excited for our state," Allen, the OHA director, said Friday. thanks to our winner and the more than 2.4 million other Oregonians who've received at least one dose of the safe and effective COVID-19 vaccinations, COVID-19 no longer holds Oregon in its grip. The impact the vaccine rollout has had on the coronavirus is dramatic. Six weeks ago, Oregon was seeing an average of 517 new cases and 8 COVID-related deaths per day, with hospitals in every region at or over capacity treating severely ill patients. Today, the 7-day average for new daily cases has dropped to around 160, and fewer than 100 people are currently hospitalized with severe COVID-19 cases, the lowest number the state has seen since last summer. More than 90% of hospitalizations and deaths have been in unvaccinated individuals, Allen said. For more information about the vaccine and where you can find it, visit covidvaccine.oregon.gov. If you have questions about taking the vaccine, consult your healthcare provider. Governor Kate Brown on Wednesday issued a new executive order directing state agencies to curtail non-essential water use, implement water conservation measures, and encourage drought resiliency. The directive came as a result of 19 Oregon counties already in declared drought emergencies, and the rest of Oregon facing threats of drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. The western half of Clackamas County is experiencing a severe drought this summer, according to the monitor. Oregon has a strong history of managing and caring for water, but climate change and chronic drought requires water conservation and a commitment to working together, Brown said in a press release. Many state agencies have already taken steps to make their operations more sustainable and reduce water usage, the governor said. She said the new executive order will enable state governments to respond to the growing water crisis, lead by example, and show Oregonians that drought is a serious issue, but one that can be managed if we all work together. Many local governments have also curtailed water use on city and county facilities, she said. I appreciate their leadership and encourage all local governments in drought-stricken counties to conserve water and begin implementing drought resiliency strategies as we face a worsening drought together. Effective today, the executive order directs state agencies that own or manage land or facilities to implement actions that curtail or end the non-essential use of water for landscaping and other exterior features of buildings and grounds, including lawn watering, fountains that do not recirculate water, and window washing. Agencies must also institute a moratorium on new non-essential landscaping projects that require irrigation and place signs and other messaging within state-owned buildings, encouraging employees to reduce their use of water inside state-owned buildings. Now Hear This Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunziker PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3465. The Canby Rebels 10U softball team has had a good summer so far, culminating in an absolutely dominant performance in the annual North American Fast Pitch Association, NAFA, Newburgh Firecracker Tournament over the 4th of July weekend. The Rebs were firing on all cylinders throughout their 5-0 romp to the championship, outscoring their opponents by a staggering 42-5. Brooklyn Brady was magnificent on the mound, logging 0 hits and 28 strikeouts against only 11 walks in 12 innings of work. The stellar performance put Canby at 32-16 on the season. Head coach James Heckathorn said it has been a joy to work with such a talented and high-character group of young athletes. They've all progressed tremendously this year, Heckathorn tells the Canby Current. They put in the effort in everything that we do and do a great job of taking care of each other. It's really amazing to see how much these young ladies have each other's backs. When they step on the field, they know they have a job to do. Coming off of the coronavirus pandemic and the trials it brought for student athletes, coaches have put an emphasis this summer on the principle of mind over matter. Softball and baseball are mental sports, Heckathorn explains. Teaching the girls that they are going to fail and to be okay with that has been a huge factor in our success. They don't hang their heads when things don't go their way, and they've done a great job not dwelling on mistakes. Some of the team's youngest players have been their biggest contributors, including Peyton Thomas, Nalani Sampson, and Harper Sager, whom Heckathorn describes as small but mighty. They swing the bat really hard, and they aren't afraid to step in against older pitchers, who in some instances are 2 or 3 years older, Heckathorn says. When we are talking about 8 to 11-year-old girls, that's a huge difference physically and mentally. The Rebels' bats have been red hot this season. 8 players, more than half the team, are hitting over 300, led by Miranda Gray, 0.424, Madison Schultz, 0.491, and Riley Morgan, a ridiculous 0.585. The Rebels' Madison Schultz is widely considered one of the top 10 U catchers in the state. Assistant coach Lindsay Monk, a former catcher for the University of Washington and a member of the 2013 College World Series team, has been working with her this year and has helped take her to the next level, Heckathorn explains. She is extremely coachable and has a fantastic work ethic and loves the game, he says. She is fun to watch behind the plate.
Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why do we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under, it's under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Oh, wait, is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yeah, yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he even know what to get?
Look, I'm going to make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional-grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. Well, this looks different than last time I was hanging out with you guys. We're back with Shelly and Eric Arndt. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
They're the owners of the new Art-O-Matic Art Gallery in downtown Canby. And just a few weeks ago, this place was significantly more sparse and more bare than it is today. You've been working hard.
Very hard. We worked probably 18-hour days for about 2 weeks leading up to the opening.
Which was on June 25th?
June 25th was the opening to the public. Okay. June 24th was the private event.
Yeah. Right in time for the historic heat wave.
Exactly.
Good timing, guys.
Thank you.
But these walls are packed.
Yes, we have 41 artists, and of those artists, 36 of them are local and regional, and we have 4 national artists.
Awesome.
So it was amazing to find so much talent
within
a 10 to 20 mile radius.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So been open a couple weeks. How's it been going?
Good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Better than expected, actually.
Yeah. Tell us what it's been like.
We've had a wide variety of folks come in, art lovers, artists, people you wouldn't imagine that are maybe artists. They come in and maybe don't necessarily look like an artist, but here they are. They've been creating for 40 years and maybe not a lot of people know, but they're really happy to, everyone has a common thread of really being thankful and grateful that the space is here. And that's what we were hoping for, is to have that artistic outlet here, whether it's looking to design a room or a house or a business or just a place to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, Yeah. A lot of excitement. And every person that's come in here has found at least one thing that they absolutely love. Mm. So
yeah.
It's validating.
Yeah.
We do hear it a lot that everybody is, that they're very thankful that we're here and that this is incredible.
Yeah.
So it's very, it's kind of reinforcement that we did something right.
Right.
We've already had great sales, you know, even given the heat wave that shut things down for a couple of days in downtown. And and just, you know, our hours, we've only had 10 days of actually being open, but it's been great already, and we feel like we haven't even really hit our stride yet.
Yeah.
Right. Being able to properly plan for events in advance. And
From what I've seen and from what you guys have told me, it feels like, people have really embraced you guys.
Yeah. Yes. I feel that they have.
Absolutely.
The city, you know, everyone in the city is amazing. And then again, everybody who comes in here is so appreciative and so thankful that we're here.
Yeah.
I think the big thing is classes. Mm-hmm. And we do have some classes scheduled for the end of July.
Okay.
And I have 3 classes lined up for August.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go on our website, artomatic.com, and sign up for those through the website.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be great.
Yeah. Very cool. And just to remind our listeners who may not remember, who maybe missed the episode, you guys are from Minnesota. So what did you think of that heat wave?
It was different. When we get a heat wave like that in Minnesota, there's also 74% humidity with
it.
The humidity here was not bad.
Yeah.
It was hot. It's not bad.
Yeah.
We would have liked it more if our air conditioning had continued working.
Yeah.
It did not. It made things really interesting, but we managed.
Yeah, we managed. It's fine.
Yeah.
But more concerned is just, you know, the overall drought. We're not used to going this long without rain.
Sure.
So,
We
had some droughts there occasionally for a week or so, but usually we get some good rain after that. So this is new.
Yeah.
Enjoying the nice weather, but we could use some rain.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the variety. I would love to just walk around the shop a little bit and have you guys highlight some of your artists, some of the different things that you think are really neat about what you're able to showcase here. Obviously, we're going to be very descriptive since nobody can see what we're looking at.
Right.
But definitely come check out Art-O-Matic.
Yes.
Because give your guys' hours, and let's go ahead and do that and where people can find you.
So we are open Wednesday through Sunday from 10 to 6.
Okay.
We are directly across the street from Backstop Bar and Grill on 2nd Avenue side, not Grant.
Right.
We are
formerly the Book Nook.
Formerly
people
the Book
have
Nook.
That reference in their minds. So
look for the top hat.
yes. And then you can see all this wonderful stuff that we're about to do our best to describe. So where do you want to start, Shelley?
Gregory Frederick.
Okay.
If you want, we can start with him. He is a Haitian-born artist out of Wisconsin. He is one of our national artists.
Cool.
He actually he makes his own paint colors.
Okay.
So when he's painting, he's not painting with your typical paint that you buy from a store. He's actually creating them.
Yeah.
So these colors are not normal of sorts.
So we get very vibrant colors.
Very vibrant greens, reds, blues. He's got a piece that's called the Helix of Joy. It looks like almost like you're going down a rabbit hole of sorts.
Yeah.
Some are a lot of prism work. Some are more decorative or just purely artistic. But a lot of them actually have a message. Whether it's talking about pollution in the sea with a turtle and, plastic bottles and kind of man kind of overseeing that. There's some powerful messages in some of his work. Or
this is my favorite piece. It's called Continuity.
Okay.
And it's Martin Luther King Jr. In vibrant colors, and it's just beautiful. And this is my favorite piece of his.
Yeah.
Scales of justice. And
right.
So it's really powerful messages. And
really cool.
Really popular in the Midwest and up and coming on the national scene, but he didn't really have much of a West Coast presence, so we're his first West Coast gallery.
Correct.
Awesome. Yeah.
Really popular.
A lot of really cool stuff he does with colors and shapes.
We're actually fortunate to have 3 original pieces from him.
Okay, cool. Right, so you have some prints and some originals for a lot of your artists?
Yep. And as a whole, we have a good balance of originals and prints. So, originals are tend to be a little more costly, not necessarily in everyone's price range.
Yeah.
So again, we wanted to offer things at all price levels. So someone could get a print for $35-$40, or they can buy an original for more.
Yeah.
Have the options. And he is right in between 2 local artists, Lee Butterfield and Annie Marie. They are different points, so relatively newer in their careers and their journeys, but super talented local artists who again just kind of need that outlet for people to see their work. And
Annie Marie's paintings remind me of kind of 1980s Miami.
Okay, why is that?
I think it's just the neon colors. Yeah. It's, you know, got the blacks. This definitely, the mingling in Phoenix room definitely reminds me of a 1980 like print shirt. It's got light pastel pinks and blues and just kind of smeared across the canvas.
Very cool.
It's fun, it's vibrant.
Kind of a summertime feel to it with the colors.
Yeah.
The pinks and reds. And
And all of everything we have from her is an original, as well as Lee Butterfield. These are originals. We do not have prints of his work. We only have four pieces from him total.
But everything's original for him. And
again, very, very vibrant colors.
Yeah, I love the
reds,
colors.
Blues. This one is called Festival.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of reminds you of people in a crowd during the summer.
Yeah.
Again, reds, blues, oranges, greens.
Yeah, cool.
So we kind of shift from this explosion of color in the beginning. We are telling a story here, so I'll pause there and say we do have, there is a rhyme and reason to how we laid it out
here.
But it's interesting, a lot of folks come in and turn to the right because that's just naturally what we do, and they're actually reading the story backwards. So when you come in, start on the left wall and work your way around, see if you can kind of tell the story that we're telling. But so next we shift to Shane Anderson out of Minnesota. I would say street artist. He has that style. He's done murals and really detailed work, but also again, getting into
like
prism
whimsical
work and
kind
of mixed me right where you have a painting of an eagle and the head is a painting of an eagle, but then the body is all this really detailed cartoon work. So it's really blending together different genres. But then he also has,
he has
oil paintings and the
that is a female, very colorful. It's beautiful. It's framed.
He's been very popular. He also had the spray paint ones with the rockers.
He also has Janis Joplin and Jerry Garcia, as well as Eric Clapton and Kurt Cobain.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He also does that. So he's very, he's got a wide variety of what he does.
Awesome. Yeah,
people have really been gravitating towards his work. So we, again, he keeps sending us new pieces and people keep buying them. So we keeps changing every week for what we have for him.
Right.
Cool. Now we come to this horror.
This is Jason's story.
So that's we go from Shane here to then another local artist who supremely talented, but we actually met him in the beginning when we were kind of first having this idea. He was one of the artists that we talked to. It really helped us kind of guide in how we want to approach artists and work with them. And I really have a home for people to see his work because he works in graphite and it's so detailed and so time-consuming. And
this is Jason Stewart.
Yes.
Out of Portland.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of graphite work as well as digital work, but blending, the dark and light, evil, good. Sometimes you look at something, you're initially maybe a little scared by it, but then you look closer and you're like, well, it's not so scary. It's actually, the person's smiling. Like, what?
A lot
of shadows and light work. And we do have an original piece from him that we're currently getting framed, and that'll be in here soon.
There's a lot of he mixes nature with people and animals.
And animals,
So we have about 19 unique pieces by Jason. We'll be looking to do an exhibit for him soon, so folks can really see his whole portfolio work.
Right.
From there, then we go to Nick Ramos.
Back to color.
Tons of vibrant, kind of almost street art. I hate to say that, but confine anyone to one box. But there's a lot of pop culture references in his work. You'll see Mario Brothers, Disney characters, SpongeBob.
The stop sign has the Cheshire Cat in it. He's specific. This is an original stop sign. That is a stop sign. This is the only original piece that we will have probably from him that he will never replicate again. He doesn't take prints of this. It is a stop sign. It has, again, the Cheshire Cat, and there's some Mario references
Rick
in here.
Rick and
Morty.
It was made for us. It's called the Mad Catter.
Okay. That's so cool.
And then below
that
is
the
elephant.
And it glows in a black light.
Yes, and it glows in a black light.
That's awesome.
And we've got the elephant of, again, kind of pastel, but flowers. This one almost reminds me of like a peace, love, and happiness type of painting. Pinks, just fun,
so
whimsical.
That first wall here, this first 20 feet was really
sort of like
kinda
surreal.
Well, it's like exposure on color and kind of beginning of art and the foundations of it, right? A lot of it started with artists and this community, and then certain ones get popular and they you know, they progress up, but it's really kind of coming into the different stages of art. And so next we kind of went to photography, and the first one being Andrew Sambasito. A lot of the local folks
love
know
him.
His work, seen it at Wayward.
Yeah.
Andrew's been awesome to work with. And he's made actually a couple of pieces exclusive to us, including this monster 40 by 60 piece of Reflection Canyon in Utah. It's one of a kind, and
it's very
beautiful.
He does a lot of work with the interplay between the land and the sky,
yes,
especially the night sky. Those two up there with the lightning, I actually haven't seen those before. Those are really cool.
Yes. So he has a series of three. It's a series of three.
Okay.
So when we met with him, we said, what is the work you haven't put out yet? Let's look through that. We want to put some of that out. So some of these pieces are exclusive to Artomatic.
Is there some kind of light source for...
For this one?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's a light. It's a spotlight.
Oh, wow.
It's enhancing it, but that is how it's
It
made.
Is lit. I mean, they actually... He did light the... The church.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's funny. A lot of people do ask.
Yeah, it looks like it's lit from behind. Yeah.
It's not. That's just how the piece is, and we're putting a spotlight on it.
Cool.
And the great thing with the photographers is if there's something that someone likes, we can get it in any
different
sizes.
Yeah.
Any medium, metal, paper.
So again, if this 40 by 60, if somebody wanted a piece that was a 40 by 60, but not necessarily this print, but wanted it in any other print, we could absolutely
we'll help them
get that.
Yeah, cool.
And then we go to Phil Sargent, local artist, phenomenal story, cancer survivor, obviously a very talented painter.
Yeah, a lot of large scale
stuff.
He stepped away from painting for about 40 years, and then during his cancer recovery and treatment, he was...
He
picked up the brush again because he wasn't able to golf, and turns out he still had it.
Wow.
Yes.
What's the waterfall up there? You know that scene?
I don't have the name for that.
Okay.
Oh, it's Siren Sky?
Oh, Siren
Sky. Or Siren Falls.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Yeah, I know where it looks sort of similar to Sahaley Falls, but I don't think it is.
And that one, we hit it with the right light so you can see the bands of light coming in across it.
And it's huge.
Make it come alive. There's actually some sparkle in there too, of course.
Yeah, what's the scale of that one?
That is 5x5, I want to say.
I think so.
Yeah,
it's about 5x5.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's called Spring Falls.
He also works in the California coast and the classic Volkswagen Beetle, and we go from there to Anna Tews, another local artist. Some folks have probably seen her work at Bee's Bakery.
Yeah.
That's actually where we found her, too. But she reached out to us before we had a chance to call her, so we love that. All original pieces. Is it acrylic work, mainly? And it's really impressionistic.
Yeah.
She's a bit huge fan of Monet.
Yeah.
So for folks of that style, type of expressionism, impressionism.
Awesome.
Really,
Anna's super talented. I love
that
you guys have.
She has flowers. I love this dahlias and eucalyptus. It's probably one of my favorite pieces by her. I just love that piece. It's so pink and just vibrant.
That is cool. And all the little artists have their stories and their bios out so folks can see who's behind all this work.
Yes, we wanted to make sure that the community knew when they were coming in here, the people, our customers knew who they were buying. You know,
they're supporting. Yeah.
They're who they're supporting, who's behind the art. You know, it's always good to put kind of a name or a face with the name. And
Well, we got time for maybe just a few more. Yeah. We're here at some smaller scale pieces.
Yeah, so here's almost, I was kind of looking, it's like the whimsical corner. So we have a couple of local artists, Tamara Scott and Melissa Johnson.
I love these
Johnson.
Robot, like then, sort of robots, but in like Americana type scenes.
Yes, very popular. That's Lauren Breer. It's Robots and Robots out of Austin, Texas.
Okay,
We met her in Minnesota.
Yeah.
We've owned her work for a while. So we love it that we're able to have her share the wall with some local artists here, and you know, really.
Melissa Johnson, she does the mandala work there. Again, Tamara Scott, whimsical. We've got Heather Andrews, who's amazing. She also does the beetle wing jewelry over there. She makes earrings and necklaces out of beetle wings.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
Crazy.
So look around. You see Holly Cronin. She works in all different mediums. Just definitely an artist through and through.
Got the amazing Greg Thomas, I believe.
Gregory Thomas, another local gentleman. We're his first gallery. Cheryl Mazik.
We've seen her at Alcohol Inc.
Yeah, we had her on the pod before. Yep.
Very colorful clocks, and that she'll also be doing classes later in the year on that.
Awesome.
And then more acrylic work and abstract and photography, paintings, again, just different types of photography to more local paintings from Angela Hawes. She actually works at Karis and also has an excellent painting of the Karis school.
Yeah.
And then some other local photographers here, Joshua Johnson and
Tony Gonzalez. Elaine Swite.
Just kind of then up and coming, maybe not as known. I don't believe they're a part of the showcase, but they're obviously very talented, and we wanted to have a home for them. Oh, Joshua's.
Okay. Yeah. And so is Tony.
They're both there.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then some acrylic works.
Amy Covington, who is actually in charge of the artist showcase.
Yeah,
she has some pieces in here, the large one up above.
Yeah, Tony Gonzalez showing off his photography skills and also the use of the Force to balance those
rocks. Exactly, because he's a Jedi.
Yes. Have to come see the photos to get that joke. So
we're kind of late in like the last 2 weeks before we opened, we were able to find a wonderful mixed media artist, Debbie Radakovich. With Junk Refund going on this weekend, it's perfect timing. She upcycles. She finds these figures and works in the fabric and combining used items to make something new.
Cool.
And then also a mosaic tile work from Jean Kelly Brown. We're actually doing a class for her soon on a birdhouse, so that's still open for folks. We have metal worker who also works with wood.
Woodworker.
Yes, we have cutting boards and serving trays and end tables.
I think they have something for everyone.
I think you can convince me. And art supplies. If you get inspired after coming to visit.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for taking time out again. The place looks fantastic. You've done such a phenomenal job. Congrats on all your success so far. Before you go, you want to remind people again where they can find you and get some more information about you online.
Yes. So again, we are located across the street from Backstop Bar and Grill on 2nd Avenue, the old Book Nook location. Mm-hmm. You can go to our website, Artomadic, artomaddic.com. And the events are under our events where you can register for the classes that are coming up and find also a lot of these photos of the work here online as well under our gallery.
Awesome. Very cool. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Police beat for basically the entire month of May and the last few days of April. Here we go. These are the highlights. This is the good stuff. April 20th at 11:42 a.m., methamphetamine was seized from a vehicle being driven by a driver whose license had been revoked. On April 21st at 4:53 a.m., report of 2 persons trespassing and sleeping on private residential property. When contacted, the individuals advised that they had missed their bus, but agreed to move along. On April 22nd at 7:58 p.m., driver arrested for attempting to elude a police officer. On April 23rd at 11:59 a.m., response to a hit-and-run traffic crash. Based on witness information, the hit-and-run vehicle and the driver were located. On April 26th at 7:03 a.m., a driver was cited for possession of methamphetamine. On April 27th at 11:52 a.m., a speeding motorcycle was stopped and the driver was arrested for driving while revoked and a felon in possession of a restricted weapon. At 9:12 p.m. on April 28th, a driver was cited for driving uninsured, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of methamphetamine. The vehicle was towed, and the driver was given a courtesy ride to the Oregon City Transit Center. That's got to be a fun drive in a car with cops. On April 29th at 4:46 p.m., response to an injury accident involving a vehicle and a person in a wheelchair. The driver was cited for failure to yield. On April 30th at 1 p.m., response to a report of a person throwing rocks at vehicles. Suspect arrested for criminal mischief and reckless endangerment. Also, being a child. I don't know. I guess I don't like rocks being thrown at cars. On May 4th, may the 4th be with you, at 8:09 p.m., report of a vehicle being driven recklessly. Officers located and stopped the suspect vehicle and arrested the driver for DUI, reckless driving, recklessly endangering, and resisting arrest. They also found the guy that blew up the Death Star. Let's get him thrown in jail. Am I right? No? Not an Empire? All right. On May 5th, at 10:03 a.m., an officer attempted to conduct a traffic stop on a motorcycle traveling at speeds up to 98 miles an hour. After crashing the motorcycle, the operator of the motorcycle was arrested for attempting to elude a police officer. On May 8th at 6 a.m., response to report of traffic cones scattered on the roadway. While investigating, it was learned that several windows of construction vehicles had been broken out. On May 9th at 7:27 p.m., report of money being stolen from a cash box. On May 12th, report of an unknown person jacking up a victim's vehicle, and when approached, the suspect took the jack and just left. At 8 p.m. that same day, report of a person possibly under the influence standing on railroad tracks. The suspect was arrested for criminal trespass, possession of heroin, and carrying a concealed weapon. On May 14th, the biggest of them all, a lawnmower was reported stolen. On May 17th at 2:19 p.m., report of identity theft after an unknown person applied for unemployment benefits using a victim's information. On May 18th at 10:08 p.m., response to a traffic crash. One driver was arrested for DUI and reckless driving. May 19th at 3:55 p.m., response to a non-injury traffic crash. One driver was issued a citation for failure to obey a traffic control device. On May 20th, we have yet another terrible, terrible incident. Response to a report of a person egging vehicles. Doesn't say that they caught him, so, you know, he's still out there, egging us on. On May 21st at 8:50 p.m., following a vehicular pursuit, a driver was arrested for attempting to elude a police officer, possession of methamphetamine, and multiple outstanding warrants. His companion was also arrested on an outstanding warrant. And finally, it looks like everything's cleared up. You don't have to worry, because on May 22nd, a suspect was arrested for criminal mischief after he was seen egging vehicles and urinating on the side of a house on previous dates.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, Do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then.
Wait, what?
And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This, Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This, Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.